In simple terms, these two statements, when translated, come to this. By me has been spun out all this world. Avyakta Murtina. I am the one who is avyakta, who is non-manifest. Avyakta Murtina. Even my form is non-manifest. And then he says, Matsthani Sarabhutani. In me are located all the creatures, all the beings, all the existences. Matsthani Sarabhutani. Nacha aham teshu avasthitaha. But I am not seated in them. They are all in me, but I am not in them. Now this statement is a very startling statement, in a sense paradoxical statement, but a greater paradox comes now in the next one. Nacha matsthani bhutani. Even these creatures, these things, these objects, these existences are not in me. This is a direct contradiction of the statement he had made earlier, where he says that all objects, all existences are in me. And here he says, none of these objects is in me. Pashya me yogam aishwaram. Behold this great majesty of my yoga. They are in me, I am not in them, they are not in me. And then he says, Bhuta Bhrun. I am the bearer of all the creatures. Nacha Bhutastaha. And yet I am not myself seated in them. I bear all the things, all the existences, but I am not seated in them. Mama Atma Bhuta Bhavanaha. I am myself all these objects. Now you see in every statement a contradiction of the other. That is why this is one of the most important statements in the Bhagavad Gita. Some of the critics maintain that Bhagavad Gita is riddled with self-contradictions. And they point out to these two verses to show what self-contradictions are in the Bhagavad Gita. Because they are stated very clearly, blatantly you might say, openly. But like a master who is not afraid of his own contradictions, Sri Krishna states them himself very clearly and then says, Pashya me yogam aishwaram. Behold the majesty of my yoga. He is aware that all these statements he is making are self-contradictory. But he posits these statements in order to be understood, to point out, to know the reality. This reality is a wonderful reality, is a mysterious reality. It is a reality which should really make you wonderstruck. It is of such a nature that you should get perplexed. It is this perplexity that we were trying last time to discuss. I shall spend some time on this because this is the most important statement of what is called integral divine. This chapter may be regarded as a chapter describing integral divine and integral yoga. Knowledge of the integral divine and the yoga, which is also integral. Every yogic system has three aspects. Every yoga states its object. What is the aim to be achieved? Secondly, it gives you the instrument by which the object is to be achieved. And thirdly, the method which has to be pursued for achievement of the object. The object, instrument, and the method. These are the three things in regard to every system of yoga. Every student of yoga should ask these three questions in regard to any system of yoga. What is the object of yoga? What is the instrument which is used for the achievement of the object? And what is the method which has to be pursued? Take for example, Hatha Yoga. The aim of Hatha Yoga is the achievement of the perfection of the human body. So that that body becomes capable of realizing the spirit. This is the aim. Perfection of the body by means of which spirit is known. Very often people believe that Hatha Yoga is concerned only with the perfection of the body, which is not true. The aim of Hatha Yoga is certainly perfection of the body, but by means of which spiritual knowledge is gained. What is the instrument? Instrument is the human body itself. The body is utilized. The body is purified. The body is cultivated. The body is exercised. The body is refined. The body is sublimated. And all the organs of the body are strengthened, made healthy, tuned to perfect health. So the instrument is the body. What is the method? The method is asana and pranayama. Posture, yogic posture, is the method. And pranayama, the control of breath. These are the two methods which are adopted by the Hatha Yogin for achieving his object. In Raja Yoga, the aim is to attain complete stillness of the mind, attainment of silence of the mind. Chitta vritti nirodha. The modifications of the mind are stilled. This state of the stillness of the mind is a state of samadhi. In that state of samadhi, the object of knowledge is known intuitively. So the object is the knowledge of the object, intuitive knowledge of the object, by attaining silence of the mind. This is the aim of Raja Yoga. What is the instrument? The instrument is mind. Just as in Hatha Yoga the instrument was the body, in Raja Yoga the instrument is the mind. All things which are to be done in Raja Yoga are connected with the mind. It is the mind which is observed. The mind is purified. The mind is refined, cultivated, exercised, brought to perfection. Now, what is the method? The method is eightfold. We had seen earlier the eight steps of Raja Yoga: Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. These are the eight steps. This is the method. First you purify yourself. The mind is purified by means of Yama and Niyama, rules of conduct and rules of cleanliness, purification. Then the capacity to sit comfortably for long hours in a state of equilibrium, and the capacity to control the breath. These are the four preliminaries until you arrive at the fifth stage of Pratyahara, where the mind is withdrawn from all external objects. Then comes the sixth step, in which the mind is now focused upon one object. In the fifth step, mind is withdrawn from all other objects. In the sixth step, mind is concentrated upon one object. That is dharana. When the object is held for quite long time in focus with concentration, that is dhyana, meditation. And lastly, when the meditation reaches its climax, in which the subject and the object of knowledge both become united and the state of trance is achieved and the complete stillness is attained, that is the samadhi, last step. So here again there is an object, instrument, and the method.